government and also from the private sector, they can be able to keep up, I mean, to keep their status. But I think that's something which the officials will talk to. This is something I've asked the CITP to address as they prepare for their annual national stakeholder forum, together with all the other questions I've raised. Now, this national stakeholder forum, which will take place at the end of the month, I'm assuming that the CITP will extend an invitation to the members of the portfolio committee to attend this event. It's a very useful opportunity to engage with the rank and file contractors and to hear firsthand the challenges they face on the ground. And the third and the last issue, Chairperson, is the collusion issue. And this is the main issue today. It's therefore important that today we have the Competition Commission with us here to give the background to the highly technical and the complex issue, because it's not just a straightforward. And from the side of the CITP, they will also explain their role in relation to the enforcement of the code of conduct and where we are with that particular process. Let me just pause there, Chairperson, and hand over to the DG, who will just be marshalling his forces to talk to the different areas. Unless there are questions or clarification, will be guided by the chair.
Minister, thank you very much. I would like to assure you that the portfolio committee appreciates the fact that the CIDP and CBE, while they are not branches of the department, but they are entities that fall under the remit of the department. So the department still has oversight responsibility over them. They don't fall under any other department. So the department on whose door we are going to knock when there are issues in regard to these two entities is the Department of Public Works. And we are also very much aware of the fact and appreciate the fact which I clearly articulated and members also clearly articulated to the representatives of the CBE when they came. The fact, the reality that there's a management of an entity that's responsible for the day-to-day management of the entity. But there's also a board which has fiduciary responsibilities in regard to oversight and mission. So in regard to all those issues, we are at one. We agree with you. So from your perspective, we said that your perspective in the ministry, the perspective of the Director General in the department, and ours from the portfolio committee, there's this one thing that binds us together, to work in synergy in the best interest of the South African citizen. So we agreed on that point. Director General, you made mention about the meeting or the aborted meeting that we're supposed to have of the CBE last week. But the issues today that we're dealing with, they are cross-cutting to both entities. This is why there's synergy with the Competition Commission there. So those are the issues that we'll be dealing with in the main in this meeting. But the issues in regard to governance pertaining directly to the CBE, we still need to canvass those issues. When will be there a permanent CEO? All those relevant issues there. We'd also still like to know from the fiduciary authority of that entity, the board, how they are executing their responsibilities. So those are issues that we'll come to, but let's deal with the subject matter of today. Thank you, sir. Minister, we did say that it's very hot in this venue. And when it gets so hot, everybody looks works as the director of public works, but now they are looking at you. I'm just saying that if it gets too hot, sir, you are at liberty to take off your jacket. I'm going to take off mine. It does not mean that I'm spoiling for a fight. Yes, sir. Kindly switch on your microphone.
Thank you. The business of the day being the Competitions Commission issues and the cartel. Thank you, Chair. We have with us the acting CEO of CIDB, Ms. Khumalo, and two other officials she will introduce. We have also with us Ms. Linda Elomia Taza, a board member, Mr. Chris Gianni, a board member, Ms. Nazir Pando, Mr. Sipho Musai, all of them, the last two are chairs of various committees, being the first one, Social and Ethics, and the other one, the Human Resource Committee. We have an apology from the chair of the Audit and Risk Committee. We have brought all of them so that we can deal with all the various issues as and when they arise. The main presentation on the we have proposed, Chair, that we allow the Competitions Commission to introduce the subject and give a broad background to the matter at hand, and then we get to CIDB with regard to what they are doing as an entity of the Department of Public Works. With your permission, Chair, may I ask that the representative of the Competitions Commission do the short presentation.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. My name is Makgale Mohlala. I'm the manager of the cartel division at the Competition Commission. Thank you, Chairperson, Minister.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, Minister, and honorable members for the opportunity to appear before you and share with you what we went through as far as the investigation of the collusion in the construction sector is concerned. My presentation is going to be short, focusing on firstly the start of the investigation, the launch of the fast track settlement, and what we call a phase two, and briefly where we are now in terms of our investigation. The commission initiated investigation in the construction sector in 2009. And following that, we received information from one of the
I'm very sorry, but can the presenter give us a short, very short introduction of what the Competition Commission is all about before he gets to that case?
Honourable Member, I'm sure the representative will privilege us with a brief background as to the functions and objectives of the Competition Commission. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. The Competition Commission is a statutory body that is tasked with regulating competition in the economy. It considers and approves or prohibits mergers and acquisitions. When a company wants to buy another company, they've got to notify the commission so that the commission can check if that transaction is not going to create monopoly in the market or is not going to lessen competition. That's the first area of work. The second area, Competition Commission is tasked with investigating cartels. Cartels is price fixing, market division, and collusive tendering. It investigates and prosecutes cartels. The third area of work for the Competition Commission is the what we call enforcement and exemption. The enforcement and exemption, they deal with cases of abuse of dominance. That's where you have a monopoly in the market abusing its monopoly by either charging excessive pricing or refusing to supply suppliers. The commission prosecutes, investigate and prosecute that kind of behavior. The fourth area is the exemption. Exemption is when firms contravene the law and they want to be exempted from the law. In other words, they want to do certain things that are going to result in either fixing price or dividing markets or colluding. So they approach the commission and request that the commission grant them exemption. The commission will investigate that and decide if they have made a case for exemption and either grant or not grant. If they are not granted, they have got the right to approach the tribunal, and the tribunal is the adjudicating arm, and let the tribunal decide if the commission's decision to reject was it fair and a right one. That's and then we, of course, the other area of work is market inquiries, where we you know, identify sectors that we think have got a competition problem, and then we inquire into what are the dynamics, what is the state of play in that particular market, and what are the dynamics that drives competition. So from the inquiry, we may, if we found evidence that they are colluding, then we launch investigation. If we found that there are legislations or laws that restrict competition, we engage in advocacy with relevant stakeholders to influence the process of amending those legislation to be competition friendly. And then of course we one big area is advocacy itself, where certain cases that we don't think should be investigated, we engage in advocacy and trying to change the kind of behaviors that create competition problem in those markets. Briefly, Chair, that is what the Competition Commission does.
Thank you, sir. Please proceed.
Thank you. So in 2009, we initiated the investigation into the construction sector after, you know, receiving evidence that collusion in the sector may be prevalent. After we initiated the investigation, that is a cartel investigation, so we received a CLP application confirming our suspicions. CLP being a corporate leniency policy application. The commission, through its cartel division, administer what we call a corporate leniency policy. It's a policy in terms of which a member of a cartel can use it to approach the commission and disclose the cartel in return for that member not being penalized. So it's an immunity kind of a policy. It applies strictly to cartels only, because cartels in their very nature are secretive. So you've got to, it's difficult. difficult to detect them, so you've got to entice through policies of this nature members of that particular cartel to come forward and confess and give evidence against other cartels that you can use to prosecute them. So it's a policy that helps the commission to uncover and dismantle some of the cartels. In fact, most big cartels that we uncovered, we were assisted by the corporate leniency policy. So in the construction sector, we received applications from a construction company disclosing a number of projects that were subjected to collusion, and then we realized that the number was so huge that we couldn't investigate each and every incident that has been disclosed as being affected by collusion. We then launched a construction fast track settlement process in 2011 to try to resolve these cases expeditiously. So the fast track settlement process entailed firms coming forward, disclosing all incidences of collusion they've ever been involved in return. We then said they'll have to get a reduced penalty. So again, it was a way of incentivizing the firms to come forward and on their own accord and tell us what they did. So the purpose of the fast track was, among others, to encourage the firms to be truthful and disclose everything and give us evidence that we can use against the firms that are not participating in settlement, minimize the cost of prosecution, and resolve the cases expeditiously as possible, and then set the industry on a new competitive trajectory. So from the invitation, 21 firms responded to the invitation. These are construction firms, and they disclosed 300 projects. Out of the 300 projects they disclosed, we found that 160 is prescribed. In other words, is time barred. We can't investigate those projects. The law prescribes the time prescription time for competent cases, and then we then had left with 140 projects which were now supposed to be settled by the firms that applied for settlement. So out of the 21 firms that applied for settlement, 15 concluded the settlement agreement with the commission, and the agreements were confirmed by the competent tribunal as orders of the court, and those firms they paid collectively 1.4 billion. So the balance of the firms, three of them they were first to apply for all the projects they disclosed, so they qualified immunity, and then the other ones they did not want to settle with the commission at all, despite the fact that they have applied to participate in the settlement process. Some major projects such as the 2010 FIFA World Cup Stadium, the national roads, the ones that have got the e-tolls, they were subjected to collusion by construction companies. So, because not all the firms, construction firms in the country, participated in the fast track process, we, after the conclusion of the fast track process, we had to move to what we call the phase two. Phase two was now to focus on firms that have been implicated in the fast track settlement process by those that were participating, and as well as firms that participated in the fast track but refused to settle. So we had in the overall 24 firms that were implicated in the fast track which did not participate. So then our phase two involved those firms plus the three firms that did not settle during the fast track, which resulted in a total number of 27 firms to be further investigated in respect of 54 projects. So in the phase two, we gave the firms that did not participate an opportunity to consider settling with us before we investigate them further, because we wanted to resolve the cases. But the settlement regime was different from the regime used under the fast track, in that in the phase two they were paying more than those that were paying in the fast track per project. So out of the 27 firms, seven firms agreed to settle, and 11 firms were referred to the competition tribunal for prosecution, and then 14 firms were, cases against them were not taken forward because of mainly three things. The first is that the evidence was not sufficient to sustain prosecution. Sometimes they say Mr. So-and-so was involved, and Mr. So-and-so has since passed away, so there's no evidence. Some firms were basically liquidated. They were no longer existing, so we couldn't go after them. And some firms were voluntarily closed down. So on those bases, we then decided that we're not gonna, there's no case to take forward. So just in terms of the values of the project, the value for the projects that were subjected to collusion is 47 billion. Public sector projects, it's around 27 billion. Private sector projects is 18 billion. This is just the value of the projects collectively. Ultimately, the outcome of the our investigation is that it resulted in collectively a penalty of 1.5 billion being paid by construction firms. It resulted in 11 firms now facing prosecution at the tribunal. We are at the stage where we are, pleadings has closed. We are in a pre-trial steps. Very soon we should be going for hearings or trials on those matters that they've not settled. And then the tribunal has already issued what we call Section 65 certificate. Section 65 certificate is the certificate through which any victim of collusion can get in order to claim civil damages. So out of that number of 255, it's slightly over 255, 149 certificates were issued to the public sector client, and 82 certificates were issued to private sector clients. So what the law says is that once the tribunal had found that a firm has contravened the law, has colluded, so the victims then have the right to get this certificate, and then they can use this certificate as a basis to launch a civil claim in the High Court. So we are done with our investigation in the construction sector. The only main outstanding thing is to finalize prosecutions of these cases at the tribunal, and of course to also engage with the relevant stakeholders to see how we can work together to prevent the industry from relapsing into collusion again, and also to see what other legislation can be introduced or amended in order to eliminate any areas that could potentially give the firms opportunity to collude again. So that is the project that is still in the developmental stage, and it's going to need intensive engagement with relevant stakeholders, including the CIDB, the department, of public works, treasury. So once it's off the ground, that engagement will take place, so that at the end of the day, we don't want to find ourselves having to deal with collusion of this magnitude in the construction sector, because it's also taking away the resources of the Competition Commission to investigate cartels in other industries that are equally important. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, sir. You know what I would like us to do? I see you have raised your head, Honorable Kola Barnett. Our agenda for the day is that we've had this brief overview of an introduction by the representative from the Competition Commission. And then it's how their work relates to the two entities that report to Public Works. However, having said that, on another occasion, I'm not sure if this will be possible, Akona, on the basis of our agenda. It would have been propitious to have a presentation by the Competition Commission alone, just for us to be able to engage their work. One of the issues that raises more questions than answers, and I'm sure members are going to probe you in regard to this. In your contribution, sir, you said that there's a company that's formed, it's involved in corrupt practice, and then when they are investigated, they fold their operations. Now, a corner on my left and Ines on my right, we can form this company and engage in corrupt practice. And then when you knock on our door, we close this outfit. And you have said that you decide not to follow them. So the question being raised in members of parliament's minds, how many cases, what's your criteria for reaching such a decision? So there will be questions in regard to that. I'm sure members will ask questions similar to that. But let me allow the two entities from the department to make their contribution in regard regard to the relevance of the Competition Commission to their work. And then we take all the questions from the presenters, if you will allow me that. Honorable Kuala Barnett, is that okay? Fine. Kindly, let's do that. I'm not sure who's starting first. Is it the CIDB or CBE? Minister, when I made the example that if I form a corrupt company with a corner on my left and Ines on my right, Ines said, you've got experience of Robben Island. There's no way I'm going to present for anything. So, black man, I'm on my own here. Madam, we are in your able hands.
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister, the DG of Public Works, the board members of CIDB, and colleagues, good morning. The DG mentioned earlier on that I am accompanied by two of my colleagues, Ms. Inba Thumbaran, who heads up the department within CIDB, that deals with procurement and delivery issues, as well as my colleague, Mrs. Bongiwe George, who heads up the unit that deals with legal and compliance matters at the CIDB. Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the presentation and what I will deal with, you will note, Honorable Chairperson, that we also covered the background on the Competition Commission just to give highlights on the issues where we come insofar as the Competition Commission work is concerned. And then we zoom in detail in terms of the background on the CIDB processes, the regulatory framework, and the sanctions that are available to CIDB in terms of our legislation that guides us, and then where we are in terms of the outcomes of the investigations on the collusion. And then we give the progress in terms of the way forward. We have also attached, as part of our presentation, three annexures. One is the CIDB Code of Conduct, so that the members can apprise themselves in terms of the content of the code of conduct that we are using to deal with the issue of the collusion. We also attached two letters, one from a firm called Weber Wenzel that deals with some of the issues that we are going to cover in our processes, as well as a court order that was issued to one of the organizations, again, around the issues that we are going to cover in terms of the progress in this particular matter for the CIDB. Okay, as mentioned by my colleague from the Competition Commission, that they did conduct investigations, and we then deal with the background in terms of our investigations, what procedural processes we followed as per our framework, and the sanctions and the legal challenges that we have come across in dealing with this matter. Okay, so just briefly on the background. Yes, the Competition Commission, they conducted research firstly in 2008, and this was following an outcry about the costs of the 2010 FIFA World Cup stadiums, including the roads under the GFIP program, GFIP being the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Program, the mines, the ETOLs, and various other projects. They then uncovered evidence that led evidence on the possible collusion as per the information that came to their attention. When they then started the process in 2009, they then initiated investigations against the companies that were implicated in this possible collusion. And then by the end of 2009, they received approximately about 160 applications under the corporate leniency policy of the Competition Commission. At the beginning then of 2011, they launched the construction fast track settlement process. And this was basically a strategy to process and settle matters expeditiously so that it then allowed particular processes that allowed the Competition Commission to be able to settle the matters sooner. The CIDB then, that's when we started working closely with the Competition Commission, because we provided information to the Competition Commission during their investigation process, and the Competition Commission undertook at that stage that they will then provide the CIDB with the investigation reports after the Competition Tribunal hearings, which is the adjudication forum of the Competition Commission processes. So what were the outcomes of this competition investigations? There were 21 firms that were participating in the Competition Commission's construction fast track process, and out of the 21, three firms were not liable to settle due to issues around prescription of claims. And this is in line with the Prescription Act. And 18 of the firms out of the 21 then entered into negotiations for settlement with the Competition Commission. And from these negotiation processes, only 15 of these firms settled via what is called consent agreements with the tribunal. Then there were remaining three firms, and those firms were Group 5, Power Construction, as well as Construction ID, that did not settle from the fast track process. By not settling, it basically means they did not sign the consent agreements with the Competition Commission, because they denied the claims that were made against them by the Competition Commission processes, and they rejected the settlement offer, but they remained under investigation by the Competition Commission. So from the settlement applications, the first 21, the 21 firms from phase one, they implicated an additional 22 firms under that process that had not participated in the construction fast track settlement process. And those then had to be investigated by the Competition Commission under what my colleague mentioned in his presentation, the phase two process. But this was to be done after the finalization of phase one, which dealt with the initial 21 firms. So now I then want to explain to the committee around the background on the CIDB processes and the CIDB investigations. We appointed a firm, Gobodo Forensic and Investigative Accounting, in May 2014. They were appointed as the investigating officers as required by the CID regulations, and in particular Regulation 28 of the CIDB regulations of 2004. That particular section of the regulation basically covers the fact that if there are allegations of non-compliance and with CIDB processes, the board must appoint investigative officers that are going to investigate the matter and then follow the processes as contained in Regulation 28 of the CID regulations. So the scope of work that Gobodo dealt with, it was to carry out the investigation services for a breach of the CIDB Code of Conduct, which we've included as the annexure. And how are they going to do this? Firstly, they were going to review the consent agreements, consent orders, and verify whether the criteria that these 21 firms were fined under in terms of the Competition Commission processes, whether they met the criteria that is contained in our regulation 28, subsection 3. That was the first point. The second point was for them to issue the letters to the CEOs of the 15 firms that had settled with the Competition Commission to afford them an opportunity to respond to the allegations that were raised. Thirdly, they had to review and analyze the responses that were received from these construction companies, the 15 firms. And fourthly, they had to draft and submit investigation reports with recommendations to CIDB for consideration and approval by the board. This is in terms of the CID regulations. Okay. When Gobodo then conducted the investigation on the alleged breach of the code of conduct, the CIDB resorted to adopting a two-pronged approach to deal with the issues that emanated from these processes. The first approach, which we also termed as phase one of the process, dealt with, firstly, let's investigate the 15 construction companies that admitted to collusive behavior in terms of the Competition Act. So these are the companies that had paid fines to the Competition Commission. So we said, let's deal with those because they have admitted their fine consent orders, and then let's deal with them as phase one. Phase two, CIDB was to conduct an investigation on all other construction cartel cases that were uncovered by the Competition Commission during the investigation. This would then include the prescribed cases and all other cases, as was mentioned by my colleague earlier on, that some cases they did not deal with for various reasons. But we agreed as the CIDB that we will then deal with all the cases as part of phase two, even those that the Competition Commission did not deal with because the cases had prescribed in terms of the Prescription Act. So which are the 15 companies that we are talking about? Slide 15 then lists these 15 companies. And we also specify in terms of what grade level they are in the CIDB register of contractors. And bearing in mind the fact that grade 9 is the highest grade in the current register of contractors at CIDB, and you will note from the list of these 15 companies that the majority of them are actually, in fact, in grade 9. So, as my colleague mentioned previously, the Competition Commission, through their processes, then they fined these 15 companies who signed consent agreements. And what we are showing in the final column are the fines that were paid by each of these companies, totaling 1.463 billion. And they were basically engaged in collusive behavior in projects that were over 300. And the total amount of those projects were in excess of 26 billion. So from the 26 billion projects that they engaged in, 1.4 billion was charged in terms of sanctions by the Competition Commission. Now, back to the CIDB investigation, Gobodo our investigative officer, they then submitted the 15 reports to the CIDB in June 2014. And these are the recommendations that then Gobodo, as the investigating officers, submitted to the board. One, they submitted the fact that the board should consider instituting a formal inquiries in terms of Regulation 29 into the prima facie breaches of the Code of Conduct by these 15 companies. So in essence, Gobodo was saying, yes, they have engaged in coercive behavior and they have transgressed in terms of the Code of Conduct. Formal inquiries have to be instituted. They also recommended that the board considers each case on its own merits. Then in July 2014, the reports were then handed over to the CIDB legal advisor, who is not Gobodo, that actually advises the CIDB on the legal issues pertaining to the collusion matters. These reports were handed to our legal advisor to analyze, review, and also consider the legal issues that were raised by the construction firms in response to the Gobodo invitation for representation. The 15 reports, investigation reports, and the charges were then deliberated by the board in November 2014 and finalized in February 2015 by the board. Okay, then we get into the regulatory framework of the CIDB. The Code of Conduct for all parties that are engaged in construction procurement deals with these specific matters. Section 29, subsection 1 of the CIDB Act of 2000, it does make provision for the enforcement of the Code of Conduct. And it says the CIDB may convene and conduct an inquiry into the breach of the Code of Conduct, which is why then Gobodo was appointed to deal with this as the investigative officers. The Code of Conduct further establishes a broad framework within which an action or default by any of the party to the procurement process may be judged. So it does give examples in terms of what sanctions can be imposed. And any action or default which conflicts with the Code of Conduct is deemed unacceptable and subject to sanction in terms of the CIDB Act as well as the regulations. Amongst others, the Code of Conduct also dictates that a contractor must not engage in collusive practices that have direct or indirect adverse impact on the cost of the project to the employer. Therefore, in our view, collusive behavior is a clear violation of the CIDB Code of Conduct. Now, in terms of CID Regulation 29, subsection 18, the sanctions that the investigating officer may impose, they include, amongst others, the following nine that I will then elaborate on. And I think the Honourable Minister mentioned in his opening remarks some of the challenges around the legislation that needs review at this stage in terms of some of the challenges that we've come across if one starts unpacking the sanctions, there's nine of them that are available currently that we can consider when we deal with these matters. The first one is the board may order the removal of the name of a contractor from the register in accordance with Section 19 of the CIDB Act when the charge relates to transgression of a particular section in the Act. So that's one. Number two, CIDB may issue a warning to the respondent, and that warning remains valid for a period not exceeding a year. So we start seeing some of the challenges in terms of the way that the code of conduct and the sanctions contained in the code of conduct were granted, where it starts saying things like, if you issue a warning to someone, that warning cannot be valid beyond 1 year. Okay? The third one is downgrading the respondent's current contractor grading designation in the register by a maximum of 2 grades for a period determined by the investigating officer. So an example here, if one looks at most of these construction companies, they are grade 9, so one of the sanctions could be downgrade them to 7, grade 7, because it says it can't be, it can only be a maximum of 2 grades downgrade. And that downgrade, the period that you downgrade will then be determined by the committee that investigates. Fourthly, and the most controversial one, is the fact that one of the sanctions is that the CIDB can impose a fine, but that fine must not exceed 100,000 on the respondent. Now, when one starts looking at the fines that have been imposed by the Competition Commission, you start seeing the difference in terms of the limitations that are currently there insofar as the CIDB legislation is concerned. So here, it doesn't matter how much that contractor would have engaged in terms of transgressing with the code, but the code of conduct is saying, if you find them, do not exceed 100,000. Number five is to restrict or prohibit the respondent from participating in public sector construction works procurement for a period of time, but that period of time must not exceed 10 years. Okay? My colleague earlier on also mentioned the fact that we're dealing with public sector projects totaling in excess of 26 billion that were involved here, and we have an additional 18 million in terms of projects that were dealt with in the private sector in terms of this collusive behavior. But here, the code of conduct only talks about restricting them from the public sector construction works. Number six, the CIDB can order the cancellation of the registration of the respondent and placing a prohibition on the reapplication for registration by the respondent. So this is basically deregistration. Get the companies off the register. That's one of the sanctions. The next one is to make a cost determination that the accused, the CIDB, or the party who initiated the investigation must defray all or part of the costs incurred to conduct the formal inquiry. Ordering of a specific performance relevant to the charges brought against the respondent. And the last one is any combination of the sanctions that were referred to above. So it's any combination of the other 8 sanctions that are proposed. So what was the outcome then of the CIDB investigation? In March 2015, notices of charges against the 15 construction firms were issued in terms of the CID Regulation 29 of the CID regulations for breaches of the CIDB Code of Conduct. And after receipt of these charges, 5 of the 15 firms lodged in the High Court a review application against the Minister and the CIDB. And the 5 companies were Murray and Roberts, Avenge Africa Pty, Roberts Pty, Stefanuti Stocks Holding, as well as WBHO. Now, I'm mentioning in this particular slide that WBHO lodged a late application at the High Court, and I'll explain later on the implication around that. So five of these companies then lodged that particular application at the High Court when they received the charges from the CIDD. The court application that was brought against the minister and the CIDB was in two parts. Part A dealt with the five companies. They were saying they are making an urgent application to interdict the CIDB from proceeding with the formal inquiry. That was one. Part two of the application at the High Court was saying the regulations, the they were applying for a review of the regulations that are issued by the minister and the code of conduct that is published by the CIDB. So they were basically saying the legislation, the pieces of legislation that have been used to actually charge them, they are challenging those. So those are the two parts in terms of the application that they forwarded to the High Court. So what were the legal issues that they were raising? They were saying, one, they want certain provisions of the regulations promulgated under the CIDB Act to be set aside and accordingly declared as unlawful and unconstitutional. Okay? For example, they were saying the Minister of Public Works does not have the powers to compel the appointment of an investigating committee as set out in the CID Regulation 29. So they were challenging the fact that CIDB has appointed Gobodo to investigate this, and they say the minister does not have those powers, and yet those powers are in the regulations. Okay? Secondly, they were saying the investigative committee has no existence in law and therefore no jurisdiction to conduct these inquiries. They were also saying the act, that is the CIDB Act, does not empower the board to take disciplinary action against registered contractors or to even impose penalties as contemplated in CID Regulation 29 subsection 18 for breach of the Act, the regulations, and the Code of Conduct. So they were saying the board has got no power to deal with this. They were also saying the fact that the legislature never intended any breach of the code of conduct to result in penalties as envisaged in Regulation 29, subsection 18, which empowers the investigative committee to impose such sanctions. So they were saying there was never the intention of the legislature when this act was passed. So what were the principles that they were challenging in terms of the code of conduct? There were six principles that they were saying these principles are too vague to even attract a legislative force of law, as they were merely aspirational and therefore cannot be used as law. They were saying, these are the six principles they were challenging, that the Code of Conduct talks about the fact that the role players in the industry must behave equitably, honestly, and transparently. It was a mere aspiration. It was never to be used to attract a legislative force of law. the fact that the code talks about discharging of duties and obligations timeously and with integrity was merely an aspiration. Complying with all applicable legislation and associated regulations, satisfying all relevant requirements established in procurement, avoiding conflicts of interest, not maliciously or recklessly injuring or attempting to injure the reputation of another party, they were saying these six principles were never meant to attract any legislative force. Hence, they are then challenging our use of the code of conduct because those were merely aspirations. Okay? So, they also raised the fact that the possibility of names of the firms that concluded settlement agreements are not the exact entities that are registered with the CIDB. They also raised that. So let me give you an example here. So if the Competition Commission processes, for instance, in the phase one, let me make an example, if they had charged Basil Reed Group, for instance, or maybe a subsidiary of Basil Reed, because they charged based on the projects that the contractors concluded on. And if in that particular project it was a subsidiary of Basil Reed, but in the register of contractors at CIDB, we may have Basil Reed Group. They were challenging that, but you can't deal with Basil Reed Group because it was never Basil Reed Group that colluded. It was a subsidiary, and that subsidiary organization of Basil Reed is actually not in your register of contractors. So they also challenged that. They also questioned whether the code of conduct that the CIDB was applying existed prior to 2009. Because remember, these projects were done prior to 2009. So there was a question there that the piece of legislation that you are using, was it in existence when we colluded? So they're challenging that. They also questioned whether the code of conduct applied to projects outside of the public sector procurement. Then I mentioned the fact that their application at the High Court was in two parts. So the outcome of the first part where they were interdicting the CIDB processes, a settlement was reached with the four firms. Remember I said it was five firms and there was one WBHO who lodged a late application. So this is why I'm then referring to four firms, because WBHO was late when this agreement was reached. The settlement that was reached, it was agreed that the CIDB will postpone the formal inquiry and that the parties will agree, therefore, on an expedited process, court process on Part B, and that was to then deal with the issues that were raised in Part B. The settlement agreement on Part A was then made a court order on the 12th of May, and this is one of the annexures that we included in our presentation, just to give an example of what that court order looked like. And that all formal inquiry proceedings were thus suspended pending the review applications of Part B. This was part of the settlement agreement insofar as Part A of what they were applying for was concerned. The four firms therefore agreed that they will approach the Deputy Judge President of the High Court of South Africa and the Gauteng Division to obtain an early hearing date for the review application on Part B. WBHO, as I mentioned earlier, was not party to the settlement agreement reached in May, but they agreed on the consolidation of the expedited hearing of Part B. So basically, the issue here is that they lodged a late application, when this settlement was reached, their application had not been attended to, but because it was in the same spirit that the other four had raised, they therefore agreed that they are also agreeing on the issue of the consolidation that was agreed to. The Deputy Judge President then allocated dates for the early hearings, and those dates were 7, 8, and 9 December 2015, for the hearing of the review application. The Honorable Chair, we must note at this point in time that that means, and it's part of the issues that we agreed to, that the CIDB could therefore not proceed with any of their processes until this the hearing on the review application was actually finalized. Okay. Then, in November, the CIDB, this is a month before we appeared at the court for the hearing on the review application, as the dates were given by the Deputy Judge President. But a month before that, or rather a few weeks before that, the CIDB and the Minister's legal team received letters from legal representatives of the construction firms on the 20th as well as the 20th of November. The letters were basically now requesting from CIDB and the Minister a postponement of the review hearings that were initially requested by these five firms. They were now requesting a postponement of the review hearings that had been set out for 7 to 9 December, bearing in mind that this was a request for an urgent review application. They now said, no, we are requesting a postponement of this. And they, in their letter, they said they wanted to allow for a discussion and settlement negotiations that were taking place under the auspices of the South African Forum for Civil Engineering Contractors, otherwise known as SAFSEC. Okay? Then, on the 24th, the CIDB replied to this letter, and their request was denied, as they had not given us substantive case in terms of their request for postponement. We basically felt that they were playing a delay tactic. They wanted a review application. Deputy Judge President granted that. The dates were given. Now, weeks before the sitting, they then said, no, we want a postponement because we're discussing other things in a different forum. Okay, then that was denied because they did not give us reasons that were substantive enough for the board to actually consider their request. When we then submitted this refusal to postpone on the 24th of November, on the 3rd of December, about a week later, the state attorney, on behalf of the minister, conceded to the request for postponement, for a period not exceeding 6 months, to allow these discussions that were spoken about under the auspices of SAFSEC. Therefore, based on the state attorney's letter, the CIDB then agreed on the postponement on the same terms and conditions that were set out in the letter of the state attorney. So we basically conceded, but this was only for 6 months. Okay, so what is the way forward then? So because this concession was then made in December, is that on the way forward, the court case therefore is postponed for 6 months, and that 6 months ends on the 2nd of June 2016 because it was granted on the 3rd of December. What then happens when this period comes and we haven't heard anything? The CIDB will basically continue with its regulatory processes. And some of the things that we just need to mention, which were alluded to earlier, is also the fact that as the Department of Public Works, working with the CIDB, considers or looks at the review of the current act and legislation that governs the CIDB, some of the considerations that have to be taken into account is we have to look at effective measures to transform and develop the industry. Because, I mean, collusion by its very nature is anti-transformational. We also have to look at the measures to prevent a reoccurrence of collusive behavior in the industry. We also have to look at stronger punitive measures for transgression. I took the members through the 9 sanctions that are available in terms of our code, and I'm sure you would agree that those are not necessarily strong, and those need to be looked at as we review the Act. We then reached an agreement in terms of Section 82 of the Competition Act that we will enter into a memorandum of agreement with the Competition Commission as the CIDB, and this, the purpose of this agreement is basically to share information and ideas on how to prevent collusion in future, and also share lessons learned during the investigation period, because we felt that there is a lot that we can learn and share between the two entities as we move forward. And the board did approve that we enter into this particular agreement in January 2016. One of the reasons that we felt that we needed to enter into this, into such an agreement, is we established when we were dealing with phase one processes that there were delays in certain instances on us getting information and updates from the Competition Commission, and they, because things had to first go through the tribunal and all of that. So this agreement is going to allow us to be able to share information and discuss matters and the lessons and how we could basically curb this collusion going forward. That is the end of my presentation, Honorable Chairperson. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam. Can we get the contribution from the CBE, and then we'll avail the opportunity to members for comments and questions and engagement. Thank you, sir.
Minister of Public Works, PG Public Works. Chairperson, I'd like to indicate that from the CBE, this marks the beginning of our work in terms of the way forward in dealing with those individuals that have been found to have been involved in these collusive activities. What we have done is we've been following the investigations of our colleagues at the Competition Commission and the CIDB with keen interest. Now that the investigations of the various firms involved in the collusive activities have been concluded, we will, as a CBE, in terms of our mandate, commence with our investigations into the registered persons that have been identified as being part of the collusive activities. I'll give an overview of our mandate in terms of this particular case. In terms of clause number 3 of the CBE's Act 43 of 2000, our mandate, among other things, is to facilitate participation by the built environment professions in the integrated development in the context of national goals. Secondly,
Orisha. It is the gentleman, Priscilla.
Chair, thank you, Chair. And the second mandate is to promote sound governance of the belt environment professions, and then we ensure the uniform application of norms and guidelines set by the councils for the professions throughout the belt environment. Now, our mandate in that regard sets out our participation in so far as the matter of collusion in the belt environment. I must also state here that we will rely on going forward in terms of dealing with those persons that are registered that have been found to be involved in this in these collusive activities, rely on the information to be provided by our colleagues at the Competition Commission and the CIDB in their investigations of the firms in which these individuals have been working or are still working. Now, our starting point would be to identify from these reports whether these individuals are registered or not, and registered with which Belt Environment Professional Council, and then the exact nature of the transgression. Yes, we know it's collusion broadly, collusion activities, but we'll zoom into the exact nature of the transgression. And I would like to stress, Chairperson, that it will only be those individuals that are registered with the Belt Environment Professional Councils. Those that are not registered with the professional councils are to be dealt with in terms of the law enforcement authorities' processes. Now, why I'm saying that is because the BEPCs do not have power to enforce identification of work or reservation of work for those that are registered to practice in a particular profession as we stand. I think that will be a discussion for another presentation when we come back. But I just wanted to let the chair and members of the committee that we will only be dealing with those that are registered and not the unregistered professionals. Now, in terms of dealing with those that are registered and those that have been found to have transgressed or to have been involved in the collusive activities in the various companies that have been identified by our colleagues, we will use the codes of conduct that have been gazetted by the respective Belt Environment Professional Councils. That will be our basis for disciplining those individuals that have been found to have been involved. In this regard, Chair, in summary, what I would say is that we will engage the Competition Commission and the CIDB to obtain the investigation reports, and then we will identify the persons, the registered persons, from these reports who have been identified as having taken part in the collusive activities, and then we engage the respective Belt Environment Professional Councils and ensure that disciplinary processes are instituted against the particular persons to be identified. And then we will monitor and ensure that the appropriate disciplinary processes are followed and these people are brought to book. And we will report as the investigator, the disciplinary processes ensue and as we move forward. Then the last but not least, I would like to indicate that the identification of work regulations will have to be promulgated so that we as CBE and the Belt Environment Professional Councils have enforcement powers, even over those that are not registered. Not only in terms of these pollutive activities, but other disciplinary measures as well in the Belt Environment. Here, that is my short overview on the matter as CBE.
Chairperson of the entity, thanks for your contribution. The reason why Honorable Fratani was asking if you are Ms. Priscilla was expecting an introduction by the chairperson, but the contribution, substantive contribution by the CEO or the person who has the management responsibility on a day-to-day basis. Now, last week we had the acting CEO, I think she's still in the room, so it was expected that she would give the contribution. The other expectation that I can tell you from members, the brunt of your contribution, sir, says that you will act on the information that's provided by the Competition Commission. You will act on the information that you get from your colleagues in the CIDB. It does not give us a sense. What is the CBE? What's your own experience as an entity? What's the management's experience about collusion there? It can't be that your entire presentation is premised on future activities that's based on the outcomes of the two other entities. The CBE in its own right has got no experience of collusion in the industry. So that is the portion that's lacking. This is why Honorable Fultani was pointing in that direction. And you may respond, sir, but the acting CEO is in the room. We'd still like to hear what's the views of management. Your function, as we started at the beginning there, the minister also reminded us that boards have got a judiciary responsibility. We understand the judiciary responsibility. But in our book, we don't know in this instance of this particular entity, if you are an executive chairperson who reports for duty on a day-to-day basis as an entity. That's the function of the CEO. So there are those issues there. We understand chairperson can say that in regards to this entity, these are the judicial responsibilities that we have. But the day-to-day functions, we'd like to hear from the people thus responsible. Thank you, sir.
Chairperson, if I may address your question. I was giving an overview of the issue and the position of the CBE, and I expect my colleague, the RPC, to come and also present.
You see, to be frank, our understanding in the House, unless members, you prove me wrong, I would like you to say so if I had the wrong understanding. I want you to say so, members. I might be completely wrong, but my impression with your contribution was that, my understanding was that you are speaking, making the presentation, entire presentation on behalf of the entity. I might be wrong, but that's the impression that I had. CEO, acting CEO. The other issue that I would also like to mention, the previous contribution by the CIDD, we also have an acting CEO. The question that will also arise from members, how long have you been acting, madam? And fortunately, the minister is here, the director general is here. How long are they acting? When is this acting position coming to an end? If a person, in terms of the Labor Relations Act, acts for a longer period than X months, then that person becomes permanent. We can't have a situation where people are acting forever. The Oscars are over. We need permanent people here. Madam? Good morning, madam.
Good morning, Chair, and the honorable members, Minister, Ms. G, and the colleagues. My apologies, Chair, for not coming before the chairperson, and also my apologies for the presentation that we sent, because it does not speak to the agenda for today. But it is one of the issues that we are dealing with the Competition Commission, and we have requested the Department of Public Works to assist us on this issue, because it is one of the critical issues that we need to deal with to facilitate and to enable the Built Environment Professional Council to have an oversight on the work of the Built Environment profession. I'll request the manager, Legal Services, to come and do and to complete the presentation that the chair has started. It's Advocate Fori. He will be coming over now. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, before you leave that very hot seat, I'll allow the gentleman next to you to fix your collar. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable President.
Chair, please bear with me on this remarks that I'm about to make. We had this circus at the hotel last week. We are not here for a reenactment of what we saw. The body language of the gentleman was here and the lady here just now told us exactly in unspoken words what is not happening in that institution. And I would suggest that we release them. They can go and prepare for a decent presentation to us. We're not even going to bother to put questions to them. They are far from being ready to take on any of the questions that we would like to get. They are just not ready for us. Saying this in the presence of the Honorable Minister with absolute due respect. But we don't need to waste time on people who are just not ready. This is not the right way you pass the ball from fly up through to the wing.
Honorable Sultani, thanks for your input. Honorable Sultani.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Chairperson, what has been alluded by Honorable Sultani is true. And we cannot keep, because through their presentation, Chair, they're supposed to indicate what steps have been taken by them. But it shows that there was nothing. Only they were waiting for the CC and other entities to complete their duties. So now, I don't think it's fair for us just to engage them today.
Honorable Sitole, thank you. Okay. Honorable Kolapane.
Sure, I think we've received substantial inputs from two entities and nothing from a third entity. and it just happens to be exactly the same entity that we sent back to Pretoria when they sent down two women to represent them. I'm really quite stunned that they would come with these little four slides and expect us to accept it. I thought that when we had the meeting that we had and we explained the situation 2 weeks ago, we would have had something more substantial. It actually has me asking why this entity exists at all, because they don't seem to do anything. They don't seem to manage anything, and they're obviously totally ineffectual. And I don't think they really know at this stage what they're doing. So I'm deeply uncomfortable with this, the four slides that have been given to us for some reason.
Honorable Kuala Barnett, thank you. Members, thanks for your contribution. I am, however, going to ask you to indulge me. I would like to hear what the legal representative has to say. And thereafter, we leave it there and I'll suggest the way forward. I thought it was said it's advocate for me. Is that correct? If you could just briefly speak to the substantive issues. Have you settled down, Members, yes?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The previous presenter, we did not even follow where he was, because it was only the first page that was shown. So maybe Advocate Fori could present in such a way that we're able to follow the presentation.
The chairperson made his contribution. So what I would like us to focus on is just to take the presentation by Advocate Fori, and then I'll suggest the way forward. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, Minister, DG, and honorable members. As the Chairperson before me and the CEO already indicated, our presentation does not necessarily stick to the matter on the agenda. I will do my utmost to make a valuable contribution to the discussion here. What we need to emphasize, Chair, is the fact that the CBE is an appeal body. So we actually receive appeals against decisions taken by the professional counsels. The professional counsels do have extensive powers regarding the investigations of complaints. So if a complaint is lodged with the with a professional counsel, they have a mechanism in terms of their acts to investigate. They have established investigative committees that are enjoined in terms of their acts to hear, to consider the evidence rather, and to make a recommendation to the counsel. That professional counsel can then decide to institute disciplinary action against a registered person, and if the registered person is found guilty by a tribunal, that person can be sanctioned. The sanctions do range from the most severe of a deregistration, then thereafter a person can be suspended, a fine can be imposed on the registered person found guilty of improper conduct. The fines, however, are limited to 20,000 rand per charge. So there are limitations as far as the powers of the professional counsels are concerned in order to discipline. I indicated that the CBE is actually the appeal body, so if anybody is aggrieved with a decision from the professional counsels, they are entitled then to appeal to the CBE. That can be a member of the public aggrieved against the failure of a professional counsel to take steps against the registered person, or it can be from an applicant that was unsuccessful in an application for registration, or it can be a registered person that was found guilty and sanctioned by the professional counsel. Those numerous other types of appeals that the CBE would receive. However, the CBE does have a role to play, and the chairperson alluded to that, to coordinate activities within the Bulk Environment. Up till now, we have not received any information from any of the Bulk Environment councils that they are actually investigating collision matters. But we do realize, having heard the presentation by the Competition Commission as well as the presentation by our colleagues from the CBD, CRDD, that we do need to be more proactive. So the proactive steps would entail that we would actually call the Bulk Environment Professional Councils together and actually ask whether they are indeed investigating pollution matters. And then if that is the case, to start coordinating the information and the evidence that is available within those structures in order to give direction to the investigations that are required. Those are the steps that we do foresee that we can take. It's fully within our powers, and we do have a good working relationship with the professional councils to get this off the ground. So that is the plea that I would render on behalf of the CBE at this stage, that we allow the opportunity to actually go back, engage with our professional councils, and then see where we actually stand. We are also very keen to be included with the Competition Commission and the CIDB in developing preventative steps going forward. I believe at this stage, some sanctions have been already imposed, and some sanctions may still be imposed. But I think it's in the interest of justice and the interest of the professions that we actually then put measures in place to avoid this from happening again. So those are the matters that we would like to propose as a way forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate. As you correctly make mention, you are an appeal body as an entity. Could you inform the House, in your experience, have there been any appeals in the past 4 years, 5 years, appeals that have been made to your entity?
Indeed, Chair, we receive on average about 10 appeals per year. The last financial year we received and we dealt with 10 appeals. The year before, I believe it was about 12, and then earlier there were less appeals. But none of the appeals, however, revolved around any collusion matter of any kind. So the appeals were basically mainly towards failure from professional counsels to actually act against the person after a complaint from a member of the public, and then the rest of the appeals would focus on a failure or a refusal of a professional counsel to register an application. Those were the two appeal grounds that we've received continuously. If I can just add, if I may, Chair, given the number of registered persons in all the Bulk Environment professional counsels, the 10 or 12 appeals that we receive per year are actually fairly insignificant, but we do not suggest that there is nothing wrong there, and the appeal process does play its role, but we would like the appeal process to be more effectively utilized by unsuccessful applicants as well as members of the public who are satisfied with the actions taken or not taken by the professional counsels.
Advocate, thank you very much for the information. I'm sure it's useful to the House. Members, I would like to give you the opportunity for comments and questions, and I would also further like to suggest that it will be correct that at a future date we'll again engage with the CBE, with the Ministry and with the Department, to see how we can be of assistance. So let's do that. Let me start with the members. I've noted your hand as well, Minister. Honorable Kola Barnard, followed by Honorable Sithole and Honorable Fultani. And Honorable Kopani. I've been looking to my left as a left winger. My apologies, Ma'am Kutani, I've not been looking to the right.
Okay. First, for the Competition Commission, I just am interested, and I'm not okay with the Competition Commission legislation, but I presume, or is it, or in what way is it in the legislation that the Competition Commission is permitted to offer deals for firms where collusion is suspected or proven? And also they say that firms were closed down. Now, as you had asked, it already struck me, why did they not go after the individuals involved? Because by now they've set up another firm and are doing exactly the same thing, and then they'll quickly shut down, as you and your colleagues to your left and right have no doubt done already, and will shut down over the tea break and reconstitute yourselves after the meeting. So I found it extraordinary. I mean, what a way to dodge the law. So I found that very odd, and I think they're getting away scot-free. Also, the $47 billion in rigged tenders seemed to me to actually be a drop in the bucket of the many thousands of tenders, but I do see they were quite focused on the FIFA and the roads at the time. But 9 years' worth of investigation, and we're only really hearing about it now, seems quite odd. But as far as their investigations go, what percentage do they investigate of the total in terms of tenders annually? I know that Auditor General can only look at a very small portion of each of the departments, for example, when they do their audits. So I'm interested in that. And are they now looking forward and focusing on the Commonwealth Games, which now may well result in exactly the same sort of collusion again in the construction centre? But even if Etiquette is now claiming it has no funds to hold the Commonwealth Games, they've got it. Going to happen, so I want to know what's been put in place to ensure we don't find ourselves sitting in exactly this meeting, look at exactly the same issues in a few years' time. And then to the CIDB, they named three remaining firms, Group 5, Power Construction and Construction ID, but in slide 10 noted that there were an additional 22 firms that had not participated. I'd like the names. They named the three, they didn't name the others. And finally, the firms inside 15 admitted guilt and paid fines. Now, surely the agreement they signed with the Competition Commission, the very reason they signed on the dotted line, ensured that the matter was now closed. So I'm interested that you chose to go after those who admitted the breach. And I want to know what the gist of the reports were detailed in slide 17. I can't believe that these firms would have admitted guilt and signed if they were to then go on to face deregistration or downgrading or being banned for 10 years. So it was very obvious to me that this would end up in court. This committee is not a court of law. I was quite uncomfortable to go through that whole court case as though we were supposed to be taking sides. I'm not a judge. I don't think anyone here is. But surely the ones that should have been gone after were the 22 unnamed and the three named firms who did not admit guilt, who did not pay fines. Again, I'm astounded we're only at this stage after 9 years, and it looks like it may be a double jeopardy issue here. I don't believe in our law you can be charged and found guilty and fined for one thing and then be charged by another entity and how many more. I actually don't believe personally that this could or should be happening. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Mkhonishwa Sithole.
Asibonga kuru, sir. Si dingalele no minister. First of all, Chairperson, I want to deal with the address that was done by minister. When the minister addressed us, he talked about the positions that are not in field, acting. When the CITP was presenting their presentation on last week, there was some indication that there were one of the CEO acting for 9 months, and the present one is acting now for 6 months. What is happening? What is the way forward on this acting scenario? And the other one, Chairperson, is that one of the minister's talk about the challenge in governance. What I want to understand, what the department are going to do now about these issues of governance. And the Russian chairperson to minister CPG and CITT are not the brand of this department. Chair, that's the challenge. We always say they are an entity of the department. But if they are free riders, what power do the department have on top of the CITT and the CNCD? And then, Chair, on CITT, on page 9, Chairperson. And slide number 9. They talk about this additional 22 firms, which have been implicated by other 21 firms. What are they doing about those 22 companies? Is anything that is happening? And the other interpretation is on slide number 10. Slide number 15. Companies that have been fined, as our colleagues have alluded to. What is happening to those companies who are not admitted? Because they are not just been fined. What is happening? What is going to happen? And the other chairperson, the worrying part of it is that those companies which are corrupt, because if you say corruption is just something that like very are corrupt, they are the highest grade in the country, 10 of them. Even the fines that have been done by the CC on this is not on, because we cannot say these are the highest grade in the country, but we are just finding them the money that we see on the paper. And the last one, Chairperson, is on page 20, on slide number 27. Chairperson, I don't know, you will correct me. If they say the minister does not have the power to compare the appointment of investigative committee set out in CIT regulation 29. Is that the true reflection of the term? It means we have to amend our regulations and our act. We cannot just have some entity which the minister has got no power on it. And the investigation committee has no existence in law and no judicial to conduct the inquiries. Those are the challenges. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Honorable
Sitole,
thanks a lot. So you are saying that the highest grade of corruption must attract the highest sanction. Next was Honorable Fultan.
Thank you, Chair. It is abundantly clear, Chair, that the department, together with its entities in this context, got quite a mounting, to climb. And I think it behoves us as this committee to help protect the exploitation of public funds by doing a thorough, work on by way of overseeing what is happening within the department to the extent of us of advising extra steps that should be taken. Just a couple of questions and comments. Starting with the first presentation. First questions will be just for information. In phase one, you talk of disclosure, prescribing Now, according to the Proscription Act, monies due to government, claims made by government, not parastatals, by government, do not prescribe. Even if there has been a lapse of 3 years or more where government did not persist on those monies being paid by the due defaulter, so to speak. So I would like to know how does a disclosure, an amount of money that was supposed to be paid pursuant to a disclosure made, how does it take prescribe? What happens, what gets done by way of settling? Is it a matter of agreeing to the agreed, to the claimed amount, or what happens? We're not quite sure, you know, from a personal perspective. I don't know what is meant by settling. The next question is on prosecution cases, phase two. The method of prosecution, is it like in a criminal court where you've got to prove beyond reasonable doubt, or do you use civil claim kind of a prosecution where things are decided on a balance of probabilities? I'm saying this because of the prescribed cases, as well as the fact that we don't seem to be getting far enough with these cases. What system is being used? This one would probably be directed at the department itself. Once more, one is glad that the minister is here and the DG also. The socio-economic impact of the losses that come as a result of collusion. Now, mind you, 2010 stadia, my understanding is that funds were channeled, our government contributed. Now, these are public funds. Now, when you pursue cases, do you just look at saying this is the amount of money that we lost? And what about the socioeconomic impact thereof? Do you quantify that so that there is equitable an equitable legal process to settle matters? Preventative measures to prevent a recurrence of these practices. The list that were given towards the end of the presentation doesn't sound exhaustive enough to make sure that it doesn't. And I would offer, therefore, Jefferson, that the department initiates a process whereby the statute gets amended. I'm particularly worried about 100,000 rands, mere 100,000 rands. It looks like there was very lack of foresight was was present when this 100,000 rands was placed. That's for very, very small things. You know, when you're going to issue multi-billion rand contracts, 100,000 rands is pocket money. It's less than pocket money, I'm sorry. Less than pocket money. So I want to say, Honorable Minister, through you, Chair, we need to process legislation at a speed higher than that of a Boeing. And we want to pledge our support as this committee that will try and get it through before the end of this year, if need be. This we have got to fix, like yesterday. 100,000 rand is an absolute pittance. In fact, when I heard about this, long before I thought I could be in Parliament, this 1.5%, government is, that's nothing. They'll pay that out of their holiday. Yeah, petty cash. Thanks, call. Petty cash. 1.5 billion, nothing. It's less than a slap in the hand. CIDB, the three things that you refer to in slide 9, how would Public Works ensure that the owners of the companies are actually nailed so that they don't resurface somewhere? I know the difference between a legal persona and a private person. But how would you make sure that these owners of three firms, together with the name, don't resurface somewhere whilst investigations are going on? Can't we go to court to make sure that they are not allocated work as firms, you know, and whilst the investigation, because I think that would be an effective enough deterrent for them to stop keeping on postponing. But if there is no deterrent, you know, measure being put in place, they will keep on, you know, getting contracts. The names that we have seen here, I've seen them on boards all over the country. You know, you see them today. And so I was very embarrassed to see those names, you know, in this report. They get in contracts, multi-billion rand contracts of those things. That's why I pledged my support to stopping this rot, you know, right from the beginning. Now, second last question to CIDB. I've commented on the 100,000 rand story. Slide 27. It's a technical legal issue that, you know, now they're taking these steps. Are they not stopped from raising these issues to say, so this institution is irrelevant, this institution comes in nowhere? Are they not stopped by the fact that they signed contracts, knowing that those contracts flow from CIDB, or is there no mention of this code of CIDB in the contracts? If so, then we're exposed ourselves, you know, as government. But somewhere we should be able to find. But more importantly, as a matter of law, codes and regulations are supposed to be subservient to a given statute. Which statute is supposed to be subservient to the Constitution, because we're a constitutional democracy? I would suggest, Honorable Minister, together with the judge, that we look at that. I want to think that they are a stop. You can't sign a contract and then after turn around and say, hey, you end up nowhere here. We are just flowing on our own. Lastly, Chair, this one is to the Minister, Honorable Minister, sorry. Why did you concede to the six-month further postponement, Minister? Is it not going to be disadvantageous to this whole process? Closing comment, Chair, with your with your permission. I'm rather unhappy about the marriage between the CIDB and the competitions. It's the integrity of that competition commission will be retained better if it remains without any marriage with any institution at all. This could be raised in a court of law by some clever advocate someday to say, these people were presupposed to be acting, you know, one for the other. I think the integrity of an institution like that, like rightful to courts of law, is that they must remain independent. Then they can retain their integrity. I'm unhappy about this agreement. Thank you for the opportunity, sir.
Honorable member, thanks. I've noted next is Honorable Kopan. But just to say that, Honorable Pisani, my previous experience is that the Competition Commission does engage other departments. There are issues, for instance, I recall when I was chairing trade and industry. So there will be issues with regard to price collusion and what have you. Then they will consult the line function department. So in regard to that, I don't see that as an abridge on their integrity or independence. But their function is such, like our committee that we have, SCOPA, it deals with the multiplicity of departments. Yeah, but you have made your point. I'm sure they will respond to it. But this is just what I thought from my experience from trade and industry and some others I chat. Mayor Kopan, Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, having listened to both presentations by the Competition Commission and the CIDB, it's like we're dealing with mafias here. I was really scared because I always believe that as a country, especially when it comes to many pieces of legislation, compliance is a key thing, and all of us, we are subjected to comply. But
those companies that have been mentioned here, it's like they are powerful. It's like we're in Brazil where certain drug dealers, they are more powerful than the state. I hope we're not going to take that road. Chair, according to the presentation by the Competition Commission, it is clearly said that dealing with this complexity of such investigation, the resource is still an issue. So it was just something that has been mentioned. And my question was, if this is really an issue, because if the resource is not there in terms of capacity of human resource, what is it that we'll be doing to be able to really investigate this matter? Now, what I want to find out is what plans do they have in future to make sure that enough resources is being allocated? Because if there's no resources, which means we are not doing anything. After checking the prescribed sanctions as they've been stated here according to the presentation, it clearly says to me that conducive behavior is a violation of conduct. And I'm of the opinion that we need really to support the department, that we need to review those regulations so that stronger punitive measures can be put in place. One thing, Chair, that I want to find out, is there any, in terms of the transgression that has been alluded here, are there any matters that related to the criminal charges that have been laid to the police, and what is the status quo of those cases? My other question, Chair, is regarding the, I hear that here the state attorney representing the minister. What is his view regarding this case? If maybe we can get his view, he's not here, but maybe the department can tell us what is his opinion or his view regarding this case. My other question, Chair, I just wanted to find out how much is being paid to Roboto to do the forensic investigation. My last question, Chair, that I feel is also very important, if maybe the department can tell us, did they manage to do any impact study or any analysis in terms of the implications regarding this collusive behavior in a construction industry? Because I really believe that is having a serious implication. Was there any study done? That's what I would like to know. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Chair, can I take you?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the presenters, especially the advocate that made a few things clear to me. My first question is on the presentation by the Competition Commission. Chairperson, in the background, they said in 2011 they launched the fast-track settlement process. What initiated them to establish this fast-track settlement process? Do they want to tell us that there was no collusion before that? Or was there so much cases that they had to do this only in 2011? Then, Chairperson, they have a set of objectives on the slide, is it number by, I think it's page 3. Objectives to incentivize firms. Honorable Kola Barnard already alluded to that question. But they say they want to minimize legal costs for prosecution. How would they go about that? And they want a speedy resolution of cases. Now, what is a speedy resolution? Because a resolution of cases would mean a minimize of legal costs. But how do they intend to do that? Then, Chairperson, they also talk about the value of the project REIT. Now, what happens when a firm is as a gebal word? What happens to that money? And to who do the Competition Commission, because I looked in the Constitution, I couldn't find something on them there. I don't know where I had to look. But to who do they account? Is that to trade in industry or to whom do they account? That's why I asked them to say something about me. Then the last one, Chairperson, on the outcome, they said with limited outsourcing, a few resources allocated to deal with the complexity of the investigation with limited outsourcing. What do they mean by outsourcing? Outsourcing to whom? And how do they go about to source out? Then the conclusion, the last one. Lessons from other competition authorities on the process. Do they liaise with international bodies such as this? And what are the lessons that they get from these international bodies? Then, Chairperson, on the engagement with the CIGB, the Honourable Sultani already spoke on the three remaining firms. And you know, Chairperson, everywhere you go, you see Group 5, Group 5, Group 5. But they reject settlements, but they remain under investigation. I would really urge that these investigations be fast-tracked. You see, I have a note here from the World Bank that says the following, and I will quote verbatim. The World Bank report notes that since South Africa's competition framework was operationalized 15 years ago, that considerable progress in fostering competition in the domestic marketplace was made through the active detection and the reference of anti-competitive behavior. Read with us. Now, and they go further. Despite South Africa's competition authorities ranking amongst the most active in Africa in pursuing anti-competitive behavior, patterns of merger activity along with prohibited practice cases goes on. Chairperson, I have also an abstract from the Government Gazette. The board notice of 127 of 2003, the code of conduct for all parties engaged in construction procurement. Then, Chairperson, on page 16, code of conduct schedule, code of conduct for the parties engaged in construction procurement. And there are certain key elements of corporate governance that are listed there, things like discipline, transparency, independence, accountability, responsibility, fairness, and social responsibility. And they say also that participants should adhere to the King 3 report on corporate governance as for South Africa 2002. And they have to comply. My question is, the CIDB, does it popularize these things? Because they must do that. For I'm not thinking a kissy country for any construction maatschappij. Hulle moet gaan deel word. Maar jy moet ook proactief wees, Jefferson. Dan Jefferson, on...
That's your third conclusion.
Sorry, on page, on the CIDB, page 12, the honourable member asked about the Gobodo forensic audit. I would like to know, was it a legal process to get them to do the work? And Chairperson, on page 22 and 23, there are prescribed sanctions in terms of the CIDB regulations. Are they international coherent? I think I'll stop with that one, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There was a question about Group 5. I think it explains a great deal to find that the Chairperson is the wife of Minister Mthethwa, it's Felisiwe Mthethwa. They might well just answer questions about why they haven't bothered to respond. I feel they're above the law.
I'm not sure. The issue is that our responsibility is to hold each and every entity responsible without she or favor, irrespective of who is the wife or who is the husband or who is the cat. Our responsibility is to hold them responsible. So we must do our work without she or favor. I don't care who is the husband or the wife. Our responsibility is to get the answers that we require. What I would like to suggest, by the only powers that chairpersons have, shall we have a 10-minute late tea break until 12 o'clock, and it gives the department a chance to marshal their answers. And then when we come back, can we have answers that are precise, that go to the substance of the issues that are raised? We only have until 1 o'clock. Thank you very much. It serves